What's up, everybody? It's NExpress time. I'm one of your hosts, Tim Mason. Joining me, as always, is Patrick Murphy.
Hey, Tim. I'm getting to the end of Breath of the Wild, finally, after like 160 hours. I think I'm finally ready to take on Ganon. I've been avoiding it for 160
You've got
hours.
160 hours, over half of all Koroks. More on that later, but that's insane, my friend. That is insane.
I love the Koroks. I love them. I love the noise they make. I never get tired of it.
Yeah, I like when you drop rocks on their heads after finding them under a stone.
Ow! Ow!
And they react. Yeah, it gets me every time. I feel like a terrible person, but I'm like, nah, my Link's super into this.
Do you know that I actually go out of my way to turn and throw the rock in another direction because I really do feel bad when I accidentally hurt them? Especially
Isn't that
if,
the best?
especially if you've made one of those giant slabs float up and then you get the Korok and then it falls down right back on top of the Korok.
Dude, that's just like the power of video games, because it's a played experience. You empathize. I hate putting my Pokemon in the PC whenever I play a Pokemon game, because I'm like, it's not that I don't love you, I just need to trade this guy right now, or whatever it is.
You're putting him in the Matrix is what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But instead of Ricky this week on NExpress, we decided to throw in another Game Boy. Ryan Kapioski is here.
Hello. I'm glad to be here.
Since I have you here, Ryan, and I know your opinions, for today, our favorite Zelda game is Majora's Mask. Now let's tag team Crush Patrick.
I mean, Majora's Mask is easily in my top three because, you know, it is a wonderful, unique experience.
Oh, it's a unique experience. I'll give you that.
I don't think anyone would hesitate to say that Breath of the Wild is probably in our top three now. Like, it is just such a sensational game. And while we're done reviewing it, it is just so hard to let go. And so this episode, we are going to do some of just our favorites from Breath of the Wild. Favorite shrines, slight spoilers, divine beasts, favorite boss, so on and so forth. Just so everyone knows kind of like what we really enjoyed about the game. But before we do that, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe comes out this Friday, and to celebrate that, we're all just going to discuss, do we want to buy the game? Are we buying in? Is it enough? Has Nintendo convinced us to drop another $60 on a game that we all own? Why don't we go ahead and start that discussion up, because I know, Ryan, your answer was not what I expected when we were talking about it.
Yeah, I think Mario Kart 8 might be one of my least favorite Mario Kart games that I've played.
Whoa,
and
really?
So I didn't buy any of the DLC. I barely played my Wii U version. And I think my hang-up with this was more on the Wii U than actual, like, the actual game. And so when I'm seeing all the DLC, I'm seeing Link, the ability to play with friends online over the Switch, I think is going to be a bit easier. And so I'm actually leaning towards picking this up, which is crazy for me.
I can't believe it's one of your least favorite.
I've only played like three Mario Kart games, so.
Okay, which ones? Just out of curiosity.
64. I played Double Dash when Tim had it, and then Mario Kart 7.
Okay. And 64 is obviously a seminal game. I mean, that was in many ways, I could say that's the best Mario Kart in many ways.
It's the best battle mode to date.
Yes, yep.
I mean, at least in my life, it had a resurgence when Birio Kart became a real thing.
I played battle mode so much in that game, so much. Just as much as I played Perfect Dark.
I stand by that one track, that battle track with the towers, the colored towers. I never remember the proper name of it. You guys know what I'm talking about. Like, it's called Battle Blocks or something like that.
I thought it was like Block Fort.
That sounds right, too. That is the best battle stage ever created, and they have yet to bring it back. So Nintendo, just, like, you could pay or charge us $10 for it in Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, and that's a reason for me to buy it. I'm being totally real. On top of that, being able to turn into a bomb when you lose was almost better than winning in battle mode in Mario Kart.
I know, it was. It was something to do. It was such a great idea, like giving you something to do after you're already out of it.
Yeah, no, I love it. Absolutely love it. But, Patrick, are you going to pick up 8 Deluxe?
So here's my thing. I really did like Mario Kart 8. There's no question about it. But I also, I played it. My brother also had it, and I played it mostly multiplayer over at his place. For me, I just pretty much did all the single player stuff and got as much as I felt like doing. I did buy the DLC, enjoy the DLC. Those are some great tracks. And because of that, a battle mode isn't enough for me to buy it. I mean, it's pretty much stacked on my Wii U right now. And even though I probably won't play it all that much anymore. I don't see another reason. I don't see a reason to get it on my Switch either, because I have played all of that. And battle mode will only mean something to me, even though there's an online mode. I think it's only gonna. It's best among friends. I mean, really, it is.
Yeah.
So it's only gonna mean something to me if, I head over to my brother's, and he's probably gonna get it when he gets a Switch. So.
Yeah, no, hear me out. It's Mario Kart on the go with like your Switch. You can bring it to all those rooftop parties.
I mean, that actually makes some kind of sense. It's obviously cool to play Mario Kart on the go, and when they inevitably come out with another Mario Kart specifically made for the Switch, and they will, because Mario Kart is, I mean, that's kind of a system seller. I remember the Wii U got a pretty decent bump when Mario Kart 8 came out.
Yeah, the install rate for Mario Kart 8, it's still mind-bending. It's like 8 million units for the 13 million units of Wii U's.
Which is insane.
That does not make sense. That never happens.
No. So I will definitely pick up any new Mario Kart that comes out, but as far as 8 Deluxe goes, it's just not enough. It's not like with Splatoon 2, which I know people are saying is almost like a Splatoon 1.5 or a Deluxe. I think there's enough new content in there, especially with a new single player campaign and, a bunch of new maps and everything like that. That to me is totally different. That feels more like a sequel. It feels more like I'm getting something new, even if it's the same mechanics. And basically the same visuals, but with 8, it's just not enough for me to drop $60.
Yeah, I think people need to shut up about Splatoon, you guys. It's no different from Battlefield or Call of Duty. Let's be real.
Oh, totally.
Like, it's zero different. If anything, the fact that we're getting a brand new mode and a new campaign, like, guaranteed, it seems like more of a sequel than, say, Call of Duty half of the time, to me at least. But
What about
Mario
you,
Kart
Tim?
8, yeah, for me, Mario Kart 8, I played so much of it and I unlocked everything, and I heard that everything's going to be unlocked right out of the gate that you had in Mario Kart 8, which is cool. That's definitely something that sells me on the concept of it, because I straight don't want to unlock everyone again. And I don't know if I have the heart to go back and just like, I was getting all of the stars and golding every single race and every like speed track. I was doing it all. And I don't know if I want to go do all that again. So the big thing for me is, how is the Switch's online service going to work out? Because if the Switch's online service is sensational and it's really easy for me to connect with people like Ryan or you, Patrick, on the Switch and play online, that's a huge selling point. If I can still play with my friends, maybe not in the same room with them, but online, if it feels like I'm well connected with people that I like, that's where that battle mode is going to seem really, really cool and fun to me. Without that, I'm a little more hesitant. I'm just like, I don't play video games with my brothers as much. Ryan lives in a different state. So, like, the only person that would potentially play this with me is my wife. And she doesn't play Mario Kart with me because I just can't sell to her that I'm trying my hardest and she's winning. She just never buys it. She's like, "You're not trying."
Trash
And
talking
I mean,
probably
that's
isn't great
probably
for a
the
marriage
truth.
either.
Yeah, so I mean, she can beat me at plenty of other games, but Mario Kart, I have been raised on Mario Kart, and I had a very competitive family that used to play all of them. So it's just like too much part of me. It's not quite Smash Bros. Where I just can't not try to kill everyone. But
So, if I'm looking at this correctly, though, if you do trade in your Wii U copy of Mario Kart, you get about $20 at GameStop and Amazon. Would that like change how you feel about buying it on the Switch
oh
if it's
yeah,
only,
for sure. For sure, if
35?
I weren't such a collector and I didn't want my Wii U library to look as rad as it does, I would do that, but I won't do that.
Yeah, and for me, I got the digital version because I think they were offering. Back when it came out, they were offering a free game if you bought the digital version. That's how I also picked up Pikmin 3.
Okay.
So I can't trade mine in. I could trade my whole Wii U in, but I don't want to do that because there are some games on there I still really like, and who knows, maybe I'll go back and play one day again. So yeah, I because I'm not trading my Wii U in, and thus I cannot get rid of Mario Kart 8, I don't see the reason to own the game again for me. But it's an awesome game, especially for anybody who never played it, and I can absolutely see the appeal of bringing it on the go, because Mario Kart 8 is something I could bring over to, my brother's house and play with my nieces. Just pop those Joy-Cons off and play some Mario Kart. And that's something they could almost understand.
Yeah, definitely. And that's another huge selling point, is the Switch is just made for it. Let's be honest. Like, it is such a good multiplayer console
Yeah,
that
I don't like
that's huge.
there's never been a more multiplayer friendly console than this one.
And I think of any console, this is the one that I'm most likely to go visit my parents, have it in my disgustingly hideous Sheikah Slate case, pull it out, take off the Joy-Cons. Hand both of those to my parents and say nothing, just see what happens. Like, that would be funny. And, like, the Switch allows that. And I think the Switch encourages that more than a lot of other consoles. So.
See, I know we're going to get into Breath of the Wild, but I feel like this is going to be the game that's going to live in my Switch because I've put in my hours on Breath of the Wild. I'm pretty much done with it. To the point where I'm like, I don't need to replay this, but with Mario Kart, I feel like I'm going to be able to take this on the go. I'm going to have it and be able to play it when I'm waiting in lines or doing, just having 5 minute breaks here and there. It'll be fun to have it for like, oh, I can throw in, a little race in between classes.
Yeah, or it could be the one digital game that you're allowed to have on your Switch.
Yeah, no, I already have Mr. Shifty and I Am Setsuna. I don't think I'll be able to fit it.
Oh. I do like some of the modes that they're offering though, and I kind of wish I could get to play them. Some of them sound really interesting. They're ones that Mario Kart hasn't done before.
Yeah, like the prison mode, whatever that's called.
Yeah, exactly.
Jailbreak, I think.
Something like that. Yeah, four people are chasing one person, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, or is it like Cops and Robbers or something like that?
I'm
Oh man,
thinking
I didn't
this.
even hear about this. Everyone goes to jail and there's a way to like get them out. And so you're always just trying to create a jailbreak while the cops are trying to round everybody up. Just a really weird, different style of mode. It looks cool though.
Yeah. And hopefully they'll have the same sort of like satisfaction with the balloon battle things. I hope that that it doesn't just sort of, I don't know. The one they actually had on Mario Kart 8 was so pathetic that it's hard for me to remember what good battle mode was like in that game.
Yeah, undoubtedly, this is like the fullest battle mode we've ever seen. The most modes, the like most care. They're really, really selling it. And if you haven't played Mario Kart 8, unlike Ryan's incorrect opinion, I do think this is one of the best Mario Karts.
Yeah.
I honestly think, like, in terms of like especially a racer, the racing, I think this is one of the best. Like, I have very fond memories of 64, and I will never get over how good that game is. And I had a ton of fun with Double Dash, but this is really, really selling itself as the way to play Mario Kart. So if you do not have Mario Kart 8, definitely pick it up on the Switch if you never had the chance to play it, because it's sensational. That's all I can say. But I like that we got a very full spectrum. Ryan is probably going to buy it. Patrick is probably not, at least initially. And I'm on the fence. So very, very neutral, you guys. Well
I'll
played.
make you buy it. We'll cover it for the podcast.
Probably. That's how my fate goes. I also have to hear how you guys are feeling about Breath of the Wild, all your favorites in that game. I want to see how close our opinions are there. Everything differed here. But let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, our fondest moments and memories from Breath of the Wild. So stick around.
That is the weapon created by the ancient goddess. The sword that seals the darkness that only the chosen knight can wield against the Calamity Ganon. Believe it or not, it was actually you who wielded that sword 100 years ago. But I must warn you to take extreme caution. The sword stands as a test to anyone who would dare attempt to possess it. As you are now, I cannot say whether you are worthy or not. If you sought to free the sword in any sort of weakened state, you would surely lose your life where you stand. Best of luck, young one.
Welcome back to N-Express. We are at our favorite segment. We're just going to talk about our favorites from Breath of the Wild. As a caution, this is not a review. We have reviewed the game. Ryan's probably going to try to sneak in his opinion, but I'm going to try to swat it down because it's not right. Outside of that, anything goes. And I'm just curious how this is going to go because there's literally limitless answers. But why don't we go ahead and start out with characters. There are quite a few characters in this game, some about as memorable as any other Zelda game, some a little less so, and maybe some the internet has fallen in love with and just won't let die. So,
admit it, Tim, you went and you bought a shark body pillow.
You know, for me, it wasn't Sidon. He wasn't my guy. But more on that in a little bit. Patrick, who was your favorite character throughout all of Breath of the Wild?
Well, I mean, obviously, I love encountering Beedle in any Zelda game, just because of his voice and his greetings. Beedle's just awesome, period. But I think if I had to go with the best new character, I'm going to go with Bolson. I love that guy.
Bolson's awesome.
He was so weird. He's so weird. And I love how every time he was, like, ordering that other guy around, he'd come up with something different to say. When you're building your house and everything like that. I loved that guy. He was just really, really, really weird and funny. He was the coolest construction dude I think they could have possibly come up with. Like, they kind of went, you know, in another way. He's very flamboyant, which is, I thought that was great. I loved his whole demeanor and everything. I always enjoyed going back to him and building up the house. And, you know, he's even involved in one of the side quests, the Tarrytown side quest. So, yeah, I love that guy. I think he is my favorite. He's the most memorable new character for sure.
So I really like that. Was it Carson, the other guy that built Tarrytown? Was that his name? I can't remember.
Sounds right.
It ended in Sun. That's all I know.
Yeah, no, that's the only guarantee here. I like that he was essentially like an updated version of the same construction worker from like the N64 era and on. Exactly what you would expect. Ridiculous haircut, mustache, and just like goofy body type. Whereas Bolson was just, I don't know. I don't know if they were just trying to like defy expectation, but super flamboyant, didn't look like he'd be the construction worker type, but he got the job done. Like, he was a hardcore build-it-yourself kind of guy.
And I love that was his really voice, cool. too. Like, his little greeting, like, hey. Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah. I can't do it, but it was great. Like, there was something very soothing about his voice that I liked, too.
So did both of you guys fully expand your house?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. That was one of the first things I did.
Yep.
It was relatively cheap later on in the game when you've literally sold, like, 1,000 different gems, but
I needed that space to put all my elemental swords up on the wall.
I know, because they look so cool, right? That was the first thing I did. Flame
I'm
swords and ice swords up.
We are clearly, like, linked in the mind, Ryan, because the first thing I did was, like, fire sword, ice sword, electric sword all on there.
Yeah.
And I was like, these will stay forever. And then I started getting the, like, amiibo exclusive ones, and I was like, never mind, Bigoron takes the center.
I had to do the same thing. As soon as Bigoron came up, I was like, oh, I got it, because I'm getting flame swords everywhere, so I'm like, man, all right. The ice sword is the one that looks the least cool, I think, so I kept the electric and the flame.
But
I never actually got the Bigoron sword from my amiibo. It bums you out a little. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah,
no, there are a couple that I haven't gotten in until, like, super late. And, like, I got weird about it because I knew they were all in there. And for the Bigoron sword, I was like, I just know it. Today's the day I get the Bigoron sword. Same with like the Sage's Sword. I was like, today's the day. Ganondorf's not going to give me a dumb claymore. And sure enough, he gave it up. But I have yet to get the shield from Wind Waker.
Did you get the boomerang?
Oh, yeah. I have the boomerang up. Oh. And so I've got like an extra like Royal Guard's shield or something sitting on the wall as a placeholder. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that I totally agree. Like, Bolson is super good. Love him. And the house is just super cool, but what a fun way to do it. So, anyway, Ryan, who's your favorite character?
I mean, obviously Kaz, the Rito who plays all the songs for the Shrine Quests.
He's pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Like, whenever I hear that music, a smile will just appear on my face, and I'm just like, I want to complete this quest, but I want him to continue to play forever, so I'm torn.
It's such a great idea tying a character in with shrines, too, with a shrine quest, because you know whenever you see him, something cool is going to happen. You're going to be doing something cool.
Yeah, and I like just, he kind of provided a little bit of extra narrative and sort of like this mythical element to all of it as he's sharing the stories of not only 100 years ago, but the 10,000 years ago. And I don't know, I felt kind of connected to the history of Link, and I'm like, I just feel like he's this tie to this 10,000-year-old Link, and then I'm just sitting there, like, wondering, like, was that a Link that I've been before? Like, is this, I don't know, Wind Waker Link or Ocarina of Time Link? And it just, like, felt like such a cool anchor to the rest of the series while still making this feel like a unique mythical world.
Right, and because the story is, you know, so scarce in this game, We needed that little boost every once in a while during these shrine quests to be like, oh, okay, this makes a bit more sense now.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think I'm super torn on favorite character because, like, obviously Zelda is pretty sensational in this game.
One of the best.
Like, she is so far from damsel in distress, you find out. And she's a very complex, rich character. I really, really like what they did with her. She just isn't satisfied relying on Link. She wants to unlock her own potential. She kind of resents Link for his ability to wield the Master Sword. And in the end of the game, she's a badass. There's no way around that. So I really liked that. But I don't know. The granddaughter of Impa, Paya, was just like this meek little ninja girl. And I think she, like, said, like, two words to me, and I'm like, cool, we're getting married. Like, you don't get a say in this.
Yeah, like, exactly.
The champion of Hyrule has spoken.
Did you ask where her tattoo was?
I asked. Like, I literally was up there reading her journal like a creeper. And, like, there's a little quest with her later in the family heirloom, and I went back to, like, reassure that everything was chill, even though you don't have to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, gave her a couple of presents, though she probably thought I was just littering.
Wow, Tim. All right. You were really courting her.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought she was a cool character because she wasn't quite what you would expect from the granddaughter of Impa, who's always been a super powerful character, which I thought was really cool. I think it could have been too easy to be like, she's just Impa young. And she's like every other Impa, and she's not at all. And that felt cool and refreshing.
I really like what they actually did with Impa being like, oh, hey, Impa was around during the fall, and now you have to deal with this older woman who can't really help you the same way that Impa was trying to help you in Ocarina, where she sort of resigned to her fate to being like, I'm going to usher in the next generation, and they're going to help.
Yeah, yeah, kinda, it reminded me of the Skyward Sword Impa, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was very
cool. I don't have many memories of that Impa.
Ryan wouldn't know about that because
he lucky,
sucks so
hard. Ryan.
Listen, Skyward Sword is awful, and I stand by this.
I'm going to agree with you on that one. I don't know.
Yes!
Awful in terms of Zelda, it definitely. I think it's at the low end, if not one of the worst. Obviously, Majora's Mask is the worst, but Skyward Sword's down there.
Well, you see, I agreed with you up to a point.
Worst Zelda game of all time, 8.5 out of 10.
I wouldn't give it that now.
I love the game. I'm not gonna defend Skyward Sword. But I think part of my, like, excitement around the character of Paya also was that she was also just this living element of something that I've never actually seen in a Zelda game, and that is the Chica. Like, we've gotten Impa, we've gotten Zelda to some extent, but I've always wanted to know more about the Chica, and this game supplied that. We got a whole town of them.
Yeah, that's
and so
cool.
part of the reason I liked her character wasn't actually because of her character at all so much as, like, the Chica existing and being this rad ninja clan and even having, like, a rival. All of that story element, I just got way too into it. Anytime I fought the Yuga clan, I immediately put on all of my stealth clothing, and if I had something that looked like a katana, I equipped that because it was necessary.
If anything, after playing this game, I have more questions about the Chica because they explained quite a bit, but at the same time, I'm like, how did you have access to this technology? What's going on here? Like, that was one of the most interesting things about this game for me, is being like, oh, there is a deep, like, backstory for the Chica clan, and then, you know, the eventual split with the Yiga clan, and I want to know more.
Yeah, you definitely got the sense that Nintendo created a lot of story for this that they then didn't use. They just created backstory for a lot of things, but chose not to include it for whatever reason. But it makes the world feel richer and alive. There are just some things you don't know.
Yeah, and that's one of the nice things about it, is, like, going forward, they can continue to build on the, like, history and stuff that they've made here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, necessary plug, go out and buy a PlayStation 4, but also go buy the expansion pass for Zelda so that come December or something, we can play more Breath of the Wild. I think that's where...
New Year's Eve, Tim. That's what it's slated for. Scheduled for okay. New Year's Eve.
Like, beyond Christmas?
Obviously, it's a placeholder date, but it is kind of funny.
So, tied to the Chica and all of this huge mystery, this ancient technology that we now don't understand, there are all of these shrines everywhere that are very, very mysterious, at the center of which are some creepy mummies. And were they re-deads? I've got a new theory.
I don't think so. No, they...
No, they weren't. They were just weird mummies. But yeah, I now exactly. hypothesize that they were the start of the re-deads. Because that's fun.
That'll be in your fan fiction.
Yeah, it's a fan
Hear me out, Tim. It needs to happen. Eventually, if Link had failed, Ganon's corruption would have gone to all the shrines and turned those mummies into re-deads.
Ooh. Perfect. I like it. Dude, if Nintendo's listening, they're going to steal that idea, Ryan.
Of course they will.
They'll also steal my idea of Link riding on Calamity Ganon. Just then, make it happen. Or any of the dragons, for that matter.
Miyamoto will tell somebody in an interview that he got the idea when he was in his garden or something.
Listening to his favorite podcast, N-Express. Yeah. Anyway, so there are a lot of shrines. I don't know if any of us are going to be able to name our favorites by name, but why don't we go ahead and just discuss the shrines? What were some of your favorites? What were the standouts? We are already talking a little bit about the shrine quests. So, Ryan, what was your favorite shrine or favorite experience during a shrine?
I mean, I have quite a few. The one that really stood out to me was the Spring of Wisdom, where you walk up to it and you have the dragon there being corrupted by Ganon, and you have to end up, like, fighting the dragon, riding the air currents, like, down the mountain as you, like, destroy the corruption off of this dragon. And that just stood out to me as being one of the, like, coolest. It's not even a boss fight so much as just, like, an experience in Breath of the Wild.
I'd consider it, like, a very mini boss encounter, I guess.
And it's so unexpected. I mean, you're just wandering up the mountain towards this spot, and the next thing you know, there's a freaking dragon flying around, and you got to shoot, like, all the evil stuff off its back, like all the evil boils and whatever. It was, again, kind of similar to Skyward Sword when you're getting all the stuff off the big fish. But yeah, you're, like, shooting the disease off. That was a very cool, unexpected, like, just surprise shrine.
And you just, like, didn't realize how well designed that whole area was for that. Mm-hmm. Like, it just worked out super well so that you're just gradually descending this mountain, shooting a dragon.
Yeah, and, which is something you'd never see until you got to the top. As you're walking up it, you don't realize how it's designed until you actually have to go down it.
So how about you, Patrick? What were some of your favorite Shine memories?
Well, I think, it's so hard to remember a lot of the early Shrines, because I do love puzzles, and I love Zelda 4 puzzles, and this is loaded with some pretty cool puzzles. Some of the Shrines are super easy. Some of them I actually was stumped for a second on. That was pretty rare, but it did happen a couple of times out of 120. But as far as most memorable, the dragon one was definitely up there, but it was one of the last ones I did, which was Eventide Island. That was one of the later ones that I've done. I only have one more shrine left, and I doubt that's going to be the most memorable. Maybe it is. But yeah, Eventide Island, where they strip you of all your weapons, everything. You still have your runes, but otherwise, all your armor, weapons, everything gone. And you're just on this island like Tom Hanks in Castaway, only there are a bunch of monsters that you have to fight. And I loved being sent back to how I was at the beginning. All of a sudden having to scrounge. Because, after you've gotten, 100 and some odd shrines done, and you've played the game for 150 hours, you're pretty powerful. And it's been a long time since I died. So it was kind of thrilling to be stripped, have all that stripped away, and be sent right back to the beginning, and remember how it was when the game actually had a survival aspect to it.
Yeah, I had some conflicted feelings about Eventide because I went there very early in my game. And so it was one of those things where I think I had maybe 8 hearts when I got to Eventide Island, and it was overwhelmingly difficult. I think I got almost to the end of it, and then I got struck by lightning because I was still figuring out that mechanic for the first time.
Oh, no.
And it was like, oh, all right, this is going to be challenging. And it's definitely one of those things where, as much as they do strip you down back to basics, if you do have more hearts going into it, you're going to have an easier time with it.
Yeah, and I did. I had a ton. I mean, I had almost all the hearts at that point, so, and a lot of stamina, too. I was like 100 plus shrines at that point, so.
I think I did this before I got the Master Sword, so probably like 30 shrines in.
Okay. Yeah, it definitely wasn't, like, I didn't die during it, but it was fun to take out a Hinox when I didn't have any weapons again. Like, I had gotten so used to just blowing through enemies that it was kind of cool to have to sneak around again and use the environment, blow up trees just to get a stick so that I could whack away at somebody and get their weapon. Like, I had not had to do that in a long, long time, and that was kind of fun for me.
Yeah, no, that was really rad. I think, any of the cast shrines were also, really, really memorable. Just, the build-up into that. Maybe not quite on par with Eventide or Eventide, however you want to say it. That was just, such a unique corner of the game. Nothing is quite like that. But, man, I had, a really, really cool time for the Spring of Courage as well. Because I remember discovering already most of the map and then just literally dropping out of the air and finding Cass playing his accordion, and he's talking about a dragon, and I'm like, okay, cool, I'm going to look at my map, and I was like, okay, I'm kind of figuring this out. And then, looking around and being like, what the hell? There are, Aztec ruin-type things everywhere. And I had just never been in the area, and it was that area was so cool. And so while in the end that quest was pretty simple, if you have the right materials, it was really, really exciting. And I can't think of an area in Zelda that was quite like that ever. So I really enjoyed that. I love the different design elements to the map. So that was a really, really fun experience for me. And let me be honest and say, I just tackled that challenge of getting all the way to the pool as recklessly as possible. And that's basically me jumping off of stuff, shooting as many arrows as I can, landing, and then using stasis to fight waves of enemies. And it was great. I loved it.
Yeah, I think one of the great things about this game is the different stories that you build around these shrines. And again, for me, this was very early on when I found this shrine. I hadn't even encountered one of the flying dragons yet. I rushed through to the jaws of the snake river, and it was just me getting shot to death by shock arrows because they fire so many.
Yeah, and man, there are just so many cool elements to this game. Like the shrines especially, you see some cool stuff. And I love the sandbox in general. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that, like, you can cheat so many of these puzzles, and Nintendo kind of encourages it, like, during some of the connect the dots electricity puzzles. You can definitely just drop your sword and it works.
Oh yeah, if you have an electric sword, absolutely, yeah.
And that's amazing. Or just, or, like, yeah, because it's metal, it'll
metal,
like,
sword, yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. As a conductor, yeah.
I definitely did that during one of the shrines, and it was like, you need to grab all these blocks and move them this way, and I was just like, or I could drop these 10 swords I'm carrying and connect them that way. How's that work?
Okay. Or the first time when you're, like, trying to figure out, there's, like, a switch on the ground and you need to stand on it, and you're like, man, what do I do? Like, there's nothing here to drop on it. I don't see any barrels or blocks. And then you're like, wait a minute, in the last room there was a treasure chest, and I can pick that up with Magnesis. And sure enough, like, that's the solution. And that, like, different style of thinking. Anytime Nintendo takes a familiar element and just makes it a little bit trickier or a little bit different, like the first eye you see in Skyward Sword, it's just incredible. I love that these puzzles can be so new years and years later. So, loved the shrines.
Yep, I'm a fan of them. I love that you can cheese them, like you were mentioning, with the dropping swords all over the place as conductors. Like, I think that that's super cool that you can come up with your own solution. It, you know, you don't have to, you know, go through the maze, you can just start busting through walls. You know, I think that's cool for people that want to be able to do it. It's almost like you just solved a puzzle of your own. You know, you figured out that you could use your own metal weapons. The game didn't tell you to do that. You just figured it out. So, in a sense, you did solve the puzzle.
Yeah, so why don't we go ahead and move into the Divine Beasts? Notoriously, basically, giant shrines. So, what was your favorite Divine Beast? And just share some fun memories there. Patrick, why don't you start?
Okay, so my favorite, the first one alone was kind of cool to walk into because I had to understand. But the first one I played was the water one, the elephant. So I had to sort of understand that you could manipulate the environment. But my favorite ended up being whatever that spider thing was on Death Mountain. That one I thought was awesome.
It was a lizard.
Or lizard. That's what it was. It was a lizard. Yeah, yeah. I just remember it had legs that it was crawling up the mountain. That's right. I remember I walked into that one, and for 20 minutes to a half an hour, you know, you're supposed to find those kiosks, and there's 8 of them or whatever, and 6 of them. I couldn't find one. Not one. And I was blowing my mind because I found them pretty easily in the elephant one once I figured out what to do. And this one, I'm, like, manipulating the environment. I don't know which way I'm supposed to go. It was dark in there at first. I was like, man, I have no idea. And finally things started to click a little bit once I found one. I don't know. Maybe I was stupid and my brain wasn't working that day. But that, to me, was the best by far, just because I got the most challenge and it was the most satisfying once I actually figured it out. The flying one I solved way too fast, way too easy, and the camel I thought that one was just kind of tedious. I just ended up using by that point I had all the other powers, so all I did was use the divine wind to jump all over the place. Never even had to manipulate anything really.
That's clever. I didn't use my wind in there.
Yeah, I turned off all my powers as soon as I got them because I wasn't sure they would regenerate. And I was just like, oh, I'm going to save these for the final boss. And then I didn't even use them against Ganon. But it was one of those things where I got to the camel, and that one was the one that actually took me the longest. And I, like, really enjoyed the mechanic of having to, like, not only rotate it, but also line up the electricity. And then there was, like, the bonus chest where you could light up the electricity and start, like, there was a long tunnel with rotating laser beams, and I was just like, this is just cool. I like this.
Yeah, that was cool. I don't know if there was also, do you know the chest that's hanging off the tail in the back?
Yes.
I remember that one.
You had to raise the ass to get it, and
like, oh no, you don't. I definitely cheated, and I was like, I don't think I did this right, but this is how I'm doing it. And I literally grabbed it with Magnesis, swung it, and then shot it with an arrow as it was coming towards me.
I tried to do that, and it fell. I mistimed it, and it fell, and I thought I lost it forever, and I was really disappointed.
Oh, no. It, like, straight up just hit Link in the face and laugh about that for, like, a minute straight. Anytime Link got hit in the face, I thought it was so funny.
You're more badass than I am, Tim. You were able to pull that maneuver off. I thought of that maneuver and tried it, but failed.
No, there were like so many times where I pulled off really funny maneuvers, but then like you don't think about the consequences half the time, and stuff's like flying towards Link. And I remember like accidentally hitting Link in the face with a spike ball at one point because I had used it to like knock a whole bunch of stuff out of my way. And man, good times. But in terms of like, the best Divine Beast, I don't know. I think I'm going to say the elephant wasn't in any way or capacity the hardest one, but it was the first one. And so that's kind of where I was discovering, like, oh, I can alter it. And that was really, really cool. Mm-hmm. And it had, like, one particular kiosk that I was definitely trying to cheese, and I couldn't get it to work. And then it just became that whole, like, I'm going to succeed at this, whether the game wants me to or not. And so I still don't know if I got that kiosk right, but in the end it worked. So
that's
I was, like,
matters.
Really happy about it. Yeah, exactly.
Elephant was so my second favorite one. That was my second favorite one, and for the same reasons you mentioned, because it was the one where I discovered how the shrines work.
Yeah, Camel I did last, and everyone says it's the hardest, but by then I had a complete grasp of it, and nothing in that, like I said, at that point had already gotten almost all of the shrines and done all like the electricity current shrines, and so like nothing in there threw me at all.
I have a question about you beating the Camel, and you got to the Ganon Blight of Thunder. How did you end up beating him when he started like calling in all the lightning strikes?
That took me a little while. Took me like 5 minutes, and then eventually he's like throwing down spikes, and I was like, oh hey, those are metal.
Yeah, okay, so my roommate ended up stasising him during that and just shot him a whole bunch. Me, I definitely picked up one of those metal spikes and made him hit himself with lightning, and I thought it was like, that's awesome. I was not expecting him to have to do that.
I didn't think of that. I was like your roommate. I just kept using stasis and just whacking away at him whenever I could. I didn't even realize that you could get him to strike himself with lightning. That is very cool.
I think the correct answer is to hit him with lightning, because he does not give you much time to hit him with stasis, and you do like no damage.
No, he doesn't. I mean, that's the way I did it, though, and it resulted in a boss fight that I didn't really... That was, like, my least favorite shrine boss fight, too. But now I know I was doing it wrong.
Yeah, no,
that was a fun experience for me.
I was like, you're being a jerk, and I want to figure out how to do this right. And so when I did figure that out, that was definitely, like, the most rewarding boss fight in the end, I think.
Man, I want to fight him again now.
Right? Anyway, so speaking... to that, who was your favorite boss? Ryan, did you have a favorite boss?
I would say that the Ganon Blight of Thunder there in the Camel was probably my favorite, but also like going through the Yiga Clan and getting to that, like the leader of the Yiga Clan was a memorable experience for me, just because I didn't realize you could like sneak up behind them all and just one shot them. I ran in there, you know, guns blazing like I do, and just started beating them all to death without getting hit, which is another option. And so then to like finally get to him and have beating him change how the Yiga Clan interacts with you later on in the game, I thought was really cool.
That was totally my pick too. I loved that whole thing. Did none of us do that by stealth? I had to kill them all too.
I was doing it by stealth, and then. Funny story about that, because I still disagree. In the final room, I had killed about half of them with stealth, and then had just managed to kill, like, there was two left, and I was sneaking up behind one, and then one of them reacted to me, and I later went back and, like, was looking at the angle. It was the guy guarding the door somehow saw me. And so in the end, I only had to fight, like, two of the big guys and all the little archers that they summoned. But he somehow saw me through, like, two walls. And I was like, you're a jerk. I have no idea how you're aware that I'm here. But
ninja magic.
Right? And so, yeah, I had a little bit, like, too much fun getting my vengeance on that guy in the end.
Yeah, and he has a personality, too. I loved that there was a story to that boss fight. Like, that was kind of cool, because I don't think that there's another one like that. The Ganon things are just whatever. They're like the, you know, any old monster that you fight in a normal Zelda dungeon, but less huge, usually, you know, of course. But this guy had like there was this little bit of a story there. I liked it. It was kind of a cool mission. Of course, then the Yuga bug you for the rest of the game.
They bug you, maybe. I just wreck them instantaneously and then take their cool swords, and I'm like, thanks.
Oh, that's
Anyway,
a good idea. I did not like their swords, so we can. I mean, I like the way they look, but I didn't like the way they played. Maybe favorite
the
weapon.
wind sword, the wind razor, or
Yeah,
whatever it's called.
I don't like the big weapons. I don't like the ones that take, you know, that are heavy swingers.
It shoots, though.
I know. I still don't like it though.
Ah, it's so cool.
That's like my throwaway weapon when I want to get rid of something. I'll use that.
No, I was into it. Anyway, we're not to favorite weapon just yet, Patrick,
Oh.
because I've got to share my favorite boss,
Oh, yeah, right.
and I'm going to say the Mulduga.
Okay.
Because while I had learned about that in town, while I was trotting out trying to find the Leviathan bones, and knowing that the great fairy, the last great fairy, had to be out there because I had literally the entire rest of the map all covered. I was just like minding my own business, and then all of a sudden, like the music starts and the boss's health shows up, and I'm like, okay, but where is he? And I was not quite ready for him, and that was just such like a fun learning experience where I had to figure out how to properly take care of that, different strategies, and it was kind of kicking my butt while I was trying to learn how to fight it. And so it was really cool, challenging at first. Eventually, I figured it all out, and then they become really, really easy to handle. But
Definitely.
that first one was like, it was a fight where I was literally freezing him with stasis in midair just to do damage and all sorts of
Wow.
Tim, you mean your mind didn't revert to Tremors immediately? I knew exactly what to do just from watching the movie Tremors.
Oh yeah, no, I remembered that they had mentioned that they hunt by vibration, and so I threw a bomb as soon as he like popped out of the ground. I shot him out of the air with bomb arrows, and it was just
Yeah.
like, all right, this is fun.
All I
See, and once you
flashback to
learn.
was Kevin Bacon throwing dynamite onto the ground and luring one of those worms to eat it and blow up. I knew that the monster would do the same thing.
See, I didn't go there. But granted, when I first found him, I wasn't standing on solid ground. I was just on sand. And so I was trying to figure out how to like get him to go somewhere else, and yeah, it was cool. I ended up taking that one out in some very, very strange ways, but then after that point, when I was farming their parts, it became a lot simpler. So that was cool. I liked the learning curve there.
Yeah, it's an epic
Anyway,
one, which is cool.
yeah. So going back to favorite weapons, then, Patrick, what was your favorite weapon?
I mean, it's. I kind of like the. I love anything that swings quick. So I guess, like. What's the weapon I use the most? If I was going to go with the one that I like using most, it was like an upgraded Trifork or something like that, or the Royal Sword, like one that's got durability and maybe some extra attack on it. Those are the ones I really hung on to. Those are the ones I liked using the most. As for or even, you know, a nice staff of some sort or spear of some sort that had some extra power, like the Knight's Halberd or something. But as far as the coolest looking weapon, I guess, would be the Great Flame Sword. I think that's the coolest looking. Or actually, no, I'm gonna go with the Thunder Sword because that could freeze some
Yeah.
guys temporarily. Yeah.
So good against Guardians.
Plus, you can throw it into a lake after you're done with it and blast whoever's in there.
How
about you, Ryan?
I mean, for the most part, I felt like all the weapons, you weren't supposed to get too attached to them. I did, however, like the Lazafo weapons because they all acted as boomerangs and you could always catch them, and that was just a fun little mechanic that wasn't really available in all the other weapons. That and, I loved collecting. I think I got a like wood dweller's bow that shot off five arrows instead of just the normal three. And I was like, this is a monster of a bow. I love this. I need this.
Yeah, I definitely had too much fun with all the Lynel bows that I had equipped by the end. But I think while they were definitely better weapons, aesthetically, just the simple guardian swords were so cool looking. Like anytime Link pulled them out, and like switched them on, I was so into that because it was sort of like a lightsaber, but not really at all. And so I was just having so much fun. I like got my first one and I was just constantly pulling it out and watching it switch on and then go away as the blade just kind of like dissolved to nothing. I was like, this is such a cool animation. Like they did a really good job designing this. So I was just, I thought it was so cool. And then when I finally learned that that's not even affected by lightning, I was like, oh man, I need to try to make sure that I always have like a Guardian Sword plus plus on my person at all times.
Yep, me too. The non-lightning stuff. That's why I liked some of the Boko stuff too, just because you could get some powerful weapons and no lightning.
Now, did either of you use the like ancient buzzsaw you could get from crap, what was his name?
I can't remember, but the guy, the scientist guy. No, I never bought that. Was it any good?
Yeah, no, I picked it up and I was just like, this isn't for me. I want something else.
I just stocked up on arrows whenever I was at him, because those arrows make the Guardians into a joke.
They really do.
I mean, I never really felt the need to use the ancient arrows on the Guardians. For me, it was all about the... If it was like a mobile Guardian, I just cut their legs off. Mm-hmm. But ones that were stationary, shoot them in the eye. Anytime they were about to shoot me, just shoot them in the eye again, or just stasis them, whack them for a whole bunch, and then shoot them in the eye again.
Yeah, I only use the ancient arrows against like the flying Guardians and against Ganon.
Anyway, more importantly, was making Link look as cool or goofy as possible. So I've just got to know, what was your guys' favorite new costume for Link?
I'll go first. Mine's it's the stupidest one, I guess, kind of. The one that protects you from fire. I don't know what it's called. But
the flame armor?
The flame armor. You end up buying it in the Goron City. And it just makes Link into this clunky... It reminds me of a deep-sea diver from the late 1800s or something. He's just covered in metal, and he's got this big stove head, you know, for a helmet. It's just one of the goofiest, clunkiest-looking things. I loved running around in that, because it made Link seem like he was, you know, an old robot, almost, in kind of way. Like a robot from a really low-budget sci-fi movie.
How about you, Ryan? Yeah.
I mean, I absolutely loved the rubber suit, and then the helmet for that is like the Jabu Jabu eating your head, and that cracked me up every single time I used it. But there's the quest after you complete the Camel Divine Beast to get the like Thunder Helm, the Gerudo like special like holy item, and having that mask where it was like all dots, I was like, this is one of the coolest masks ever in this game.
Yeah, on top of its perk, which is unreal helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I still haven't gotten that. I'm going to get that for sure.
See, for me, there were like so many that I just didn't see coming. There were some that like I was so excited about. It was cool because I like kind of saw it coming. You get a Zora suit and you expect the rest of it to go with it, right? And so it was cool seeing what the water tunic essentially was for the game. Or even, I don't know, seeing Link in the most classic expected version of Link. I don't want to say anything more about that. That's cool. I was really excited about that. Or like even some of the cameos of past characters that you got to dress up as were really, really cool. I don't want to say more there either.
Or the enemies people you can dress up as.
Yeah. Or like, you know, there was that one lady at the Zoro's Domain that was like talking about Lynels. She was talking about how scary they were, and I immediately put on my Lynel hood, and I was like, don't worry, I got this. And just that was my response to her, was to, like, put the hood on and then go take care of it. Like, I just got way too into Link doing weird stuff like that. But I think that the maybe the most unexpected was the glow in the dark armor.
The
radiant armor.
Like, I want to say that like I saw that for the first time and I was like, I had no idea this existed. this is so cool. I look like a dumb luchador by day, but by night I'm a freaking skeleton. And I just kind of like lost my mind wearing that for a little bit.
Dude,
and, like, that was so cool.
Link looked like one of the bad kids from The Karate Kid.
Right? No, it was so good. And so, like, that was, like, really, really high up on my list. I think in the end, like, probably just the stealth suit was, like, what I thought was the coolest. But that one was just so fun. And I remember catching the Lord of the Mountain and being like, now we will glow together. And just that was my response. Was kind of making me laugh, and in the end I was calling him my little glowy, and it was just a good time. Yeah, I got too into that, taking him everywhere and just like taking him to different stables and watching them be like, why would you bring that here, as I'm dressed like a skeleton. And I was just like, this is everything good about the game right here.
You just completely brought down the Lord of the Mountain by calling him my little glowy.
Right. just so fun. But one of the other things that I really liked is, like, the dying element. I know I just discovered it, but just seeing people online and, like, their, like, screenshots, I've noticed a lot of people are just wearing the Hylian tunic and the Hylian trousers and the hood, because all of that's fully customizable. You can dye all of that.
Yeah.
And so people are creating their own color schemes, and, like, it's like, hey, this is their look. Like, this guy has a light blue hood and a red tunic. And some pink pants or what have you. And I think that's really cool. I like that idea of the game where you can kind of really make it your own.
In a game like this, any options are always a good thing, because they're giving you so many options as to how you play. Giving you options as to how you look just seems sort of a natural fit. And I like that they did it with the sort of the dying, so it keeps it in world. It doesn't make it feel as video game-ish, as, you know, like selecting your character, creating your character at the beginning or something. It makes it feel like you're changing your look in a more organic way.
Yeah. Anyway, so why don't we go ahead and wrap up our discussion with final thoughts and then favorite side quests. Like, what were your favorite out of main mission moments of the game? Patrick, what you got for us?
Favorite side quest? Well, I think the Yuga Clan thing, if you count, was that a side quest? I think it kind of was, but I guess that was a quest in pursuit of a shrine. That was a shrine quest, not a side quest. Terrytown was the best side quest. I think hands down, Terrytown was. It was the deepest. It had the best, like, most satisfying conclusion to it. Granted, the reward was whatever, but you know, 3 diamonds or something, which is fine. I was rich by then. but it was still the best, kind of like the most varied, most interesting. It was a bit of a collectathon at times, but I never found it too imposing. And most of the stuff I came by pretty naturally. And even the people and stuff like that, like that you gotta find, they're pretty easy to find. And you'll run across them regardless if you're talking to everybody in town. I like that one the best. And I love seeing the town grow. And the Terrytown location, like the whole Akala region, is just gorgeous with sort of fall colors and everything like that. And Terrytown was just a cool thing to see spring up from nothing to something.
Yeah. No, that was really cool.
Plus, you could buy a boatload of arrows there once you're done.
No, it's the way to get arrows if you're low on regular old arrows.
Yep.
How about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, Terrytown was definitely one of the highlights. For me, it was actually, like, the most memorable thing was going into the castle. I was exploring it for the first time. I picked up the Hylian shield, and then I was trying to collect all the memories, and so you get the final memory right outside of Zelda's room. And if you actually explore the room a tiny bit, you find her diary, and each diary entry actually corresponds to one of the memories you've collected. And so with me getting my final memory there, I was able to read through her diary, and it sort of shed new light on these events that I had seen from, like, her perspective, and that was really cool. I thought it added a lot to the story. It gave, like, a bit more reasoning behind why she was acting the way she was towards Link.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. She's a complex character. I really like her in this game.
Yeah, and so it stood out as one of those things where it's like, it's not necessary for the main story, and it's not even like a proper side quest, but it's just additional information that you can find there. You could also find like the King's secret room that has like his entry about how he's been treating Zelda, because there's that memory there where he's very strict with her. And it's like, oh, no, you were actually a loving father. You just didn't know how to express it very well. And so it was one of those things where it added depth to both of these characters, and I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, for sure. Mine's sort of similar. It's the culmination of all of the Cass quests. Once you've done all of them, then you can find Cass in his final... I want to say resting place, but he's not dead. So... where he just hangs out for the rest of the game, and he gives you a little bit more backstory to him and the entire world. And I don't want to give anything away, but in the end, I was like, that was incredibly cool. It's extremely simple, and it could have been like, oh, hey, cool, you did all these things. Here's your heart piece, like kind of like any other Zelda game. But instead, it's just like a little bit of a narrative bit. And by the end, I was like, yeah, let's do this. I was pumped. I put on one of the random amiibo tunics, put on the Master Sword and the Hylian Shield, and I was like, I'm embodying this. Like, let's go. And it was rad. So, really, really love that. Anyways, so that's Breath of the Wild, some of our favorite memories and moments from the game, which we all have sung at this point. Days, if not weeks, into
at
so,
least one week.
yeah.
I mean, I think I did this before all of you, but I put in the least amount of time with, I think, 90 hours.
Yeah.
So you haven't put enough time yet.
I'm closing in on 160.
But so much. I almost started quoting Smash Mouth, and I stopped myself. And I can't. Okay, I gotta walk away. Just hold on.
That's a good instinct, Tim.
Bad habit, and I need to let it die. There is an unbelievable amount of stuff for you to do in the game, and memories to make, and experiences to have. And Breath of the Wild is sensational in that regard. What really sticks with you are the individual moments, as well as just your personal reaction to what Nintendo's delivered with this game. And I'm pretty comfortable saying that I think this is open world gaming done right. And so I will really miss Breath of the Wild when I finally do put it away, at least for the time being. But what a great game. So thank you guys both for joining me for this discussion. And Patrick, where can we find you online?
You can find me, of course, writing on Goomba Stomp. Check out any, we have a ton of Breath of the Wild articles, so anybody looking for more Breath of the Wild should definitely check those out. Just, you know, go on the site and you're bound to find one. Just like if you're listening to this podcast, you're bound to find an episode that covers it. But yeah, pretty much writing on GoombaStomp.com, and you can follow the NExpress Twitter account at NExpress Nintendo.
How about you, Ryan?
You can find me on Twitter at RPCappy, and you can also find me on the Game Boys podcast here at Goomba Stomp, where you and I both talk about multiplayer games, which is one of our passions, and we have a bunch of episodes up that you should listen to. You can follow the Game Boys on Twitter at Game Boys Co-op, or search us on Facebook at Game Boys Co-op Podcast. Just search for it and pop right up.
Yeah, no, seriously, if you're tired of Zelda, go check us out there, because we can't talk about Zelda, because it's all about co-op. And so until we're in the same room playing Zelda, one with each Joy-Con, then we can't talk about Zelda.
It'll happen.
So it will happen. It's too good an idea. But I'm also getting really attached to the idea of trying to play Splatoon online like that. So.
Well, like I said, with the Switch, every game is co-op. You just have to try hard and believe in yourself.
Right. Anyway, you can find me at the Freemason, MISON. Goomba Stomp, check out all my work there. I have plenty to say about Zelda there. And outside of that, please leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen to us. Drop us a comment. Just connect with us. We would love to hear from you guys. That's one of the most rewarding parts of doing this. It's just hearing from you guys. So if there's a game you want us to talk about, anything in particular that you want us to discuss, seriously, ask us, because we could easily do it. Anyway, thanks so much for listening.